This microphone is my vessel. I speak into it and things come out of it. Hold on. Yeah, we're good. Okay.
The squirrel's still here. What do you want, man? What is your problem? It's actually the government. They sent it out to me. They're keeping a very careful eye on me for the things I've done many years ago. And I keep telling them. The time has passed. There's no way you can pin me on it now. Like, I have succeeded. I've succeeded in my mission. But they keep trying to catch me every time. And the squirrel's is a representation of that. The squirrel out the window looking all auspicious-like. Yeah, I saw you blink. Oh, you're blinking a blink again? Okay. Yeah, blink another time. I dare you. Yeah. So I thought... Dude, no. No. You didn't just blink again, right? I didn't see that, right? Please tell me I didn't see that. Oh, I added up the ear, mister. I added up the ear with you with your squirrely antics. I'm gonna do nothing about it, but I'm gonna be very upset about it, Mr. Squirrel. I'm sorry. Mr. Squirrel, you're a real nut job, okay? I hope you find nuts elsewhere. I need air. There's the window here. I don't want you to let you in, man. What's your damage? I don't know what to tell you. This is sad. This is depressing. I'm being chump checked by a damn squirrel.
Ladies and germs, welcome back to Independent Incidentals. Name never changes, but I always am changing consistently in my brainwaves. My brainwaves are constantly changing. On the fritz, you might say. In a little bit of a whirly-durly, how's it going? It's currently scorching hot. I am melting right now, people. Please help. I tried to plug in the fan. There's like the smallest hope. Unfortunately, the fan doesn't have batteries, and I am going to cook for this episode. But it's fine, because this episode's going to be a cooked one anyways. Welcome back, everybody. I hope you're doing all right. How's your summer, by the way? I see a lot of people having fun times, doing trips and stuff, doing their little expeditions into the great wide world outside, where I do my expeditions into what I have to eat for lunch. I think they're equal in their own special ways, personally. I dripped the damn lemon water on my pants. This is terrible. This is off to a terrible start. Lemon water. This is going to be the MVP of the night, by the way. MVP of the night, lemon water. Let me tell you, you don't have to refrigerate it. It's fresh. It feels good in your mouth every time you drink it. Even the smallest pinch of lemon just makes the water taste so much better. And also, additionally, I don't know what's going on with my Brita filter, so that's why the main reason why I'm drinking lemon water, to kill the taste, right? You know the taste. Like, it's weird. It's a little metallic. It's a little brackish. Makes it feel weird afterwards. It doesn't necessarily cause a tummy ache like it would without filtering it. So it's doing something. The Brita filter is doing something. It's just, it doesn't taste good. It doesn't taste great. It doesn't scream enjoyment to me personally. I don't get enjoyment from it. You might enjoy brackish metallic tasting water. I don't know. You different strokes for different folks. That's what I'm saying. But like, lemon water just makes it taste good. Okay. But to be fair, it isn't as bad as it was a couple days ago. On Sunday, I had a little piano recital I had to do, plus a bunch of other stuff, maintenance at the church, doing a little choir, all that fun stuff. It was scorching hot outside. As you probably know, I was in Brampton at the time. I don't know if specifically Waterloo's temperature, but the idea that it can get this hot this quickly at such a extreme quantity to the point where I don't want to move makes it me feel like the world is going to end soon. I don't know about you. That's how I feel. I don't know what your opinion about that is. I don't know what your opinion about the world ending is. I mean, it could be good. It could be bad. That's for you to decide. But for me personally, I don't feel good about this, you guys. This doesn't feel good to me. You know, with the temperature increasing and all that, this doesn't feel good to me. There was like at least 5 records broken in 5 different states in America, and I don't even want to. I don't even want to look at the website for forest fires up in Canada nowadays. I'll tell you that much. Okay, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. But we're here regardless. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. Today, I am doing an episode that I've been meaning to do since the beginning of Independent Incidentals, since the conception of this show, because I played this game last year, around the same time, I'd say. Yeah, it was 2024, somewhere in July, I remember. I remember it vividly. I didn't want to go outside, so I played this game instead, and that game in question is Disco Elysium. I heard about this game from a lot of people. A lot of people saying this is one of the best games ever made. And I told myself to keep an open mind about that claim. That claim doesn't seem appropriate to a more lax, less combat-driven RPG. You want action. You want fun. Do you want fun? Well, you're not going to get it with this game, okay? Let's put it out there first. You're not going to have fun playing this game. But it is one of the best games, and I have come around to saying that, even though I haven't beat it yet. That's the main thing. Keep this, all of my opinions are with a grain of salt, because I have not been able to beat this game yet. We'll get to that in a moment. However, let's begin with the premise. What does this game entail? Who are you in this game? What do you do in this game? Who are you in this game? I also want to keep in mind also, like, everything I've been posting on Instagram has been complete satire, and it's just funny to me. How schizophrenic you can become by trying to take apart the world that this game presents to you, and also specifically regarding the choices you make in this game. The premise of this game is very simple. You are a policeman who wakes with no memory from all the drinking. You are an alcoholic. You drunk yourself to death for the past couple of days while you're autopsy of a body has been left out for a couple of days in the back of a random bar, and you just been drinking and you lost your memory because of that drinking. What you do after the fact is the complicated part. Let's start with the basics though. There are 4 main different abilities in this game, each of them with their own specific skills attached to them. You have intellect, how smart you are. Psyche, how in tune with yourself you are. I'll get to that in a second as well. Physique, how strong you are. And also, I guess, how assured of yourself you are. And motorics, I guess, how attuned you are with the world, how well you can use tools, that sort of thing. You can already tell which ones are the more complicated emotions, abilities to describe, and which ones are the more streamlined ones to describe. But even those ones have a more in-depth character to them. You'll see why I'm using these words in a moment. Each of these abilities have 6 different skills attached to them, as I said. Your encyclopedic knowledge of stuff comes from intellect, empathy comes from your psyche, and your love of drugs, your electrochemistry, as it's called, from your physique. It's the first thing that lets me onto this game. Not the drugs, okay? Don't take it out of the context, please. I don't like drugs. I don't like them. They're bad. Bad drugs. Yeah. I don't do any of them. I love how I was so easily able to forge 2 layers of irony right there. Because I don't do them, for the record. I'm an extremely sober man. But the fact that I have to say that in the most concerned voice, I don't do them, please. You have to believe me. I don't do drugs. I just like this game, okay? It doesn't reflect my opinions of this. I just enjoy this game, okay? It's a fun game. It's a fun game that I enjoy to play. And anyway, I'm hitting the eject button on that bit. That bit's gone too far. It's the first thing that latched me onto this game. Not the drugs. But the skills, the different skills, because it is completely, it's cradled me from the comfort of being similar to another game that I covered on this show, Dungeons and Did I write Dungeons and Drones? Dungeons and Drones. Dungeons and Drones. I was exhausted writing the script. Jesus. Okay. Dungeons and Dragons. Apologies. The game Dungeons and Dragons. Who also has a similar amount of skills, except it's 5 skills. Each of them have different abilities or skills attached to them. There's 5 different, I guess, abilities. It's hard to describe abilities versus skills. The abilities are your baseline thing, right? Intellect. It's like the thing that stems into your skills, your skill set, what makes you good at specific things, right? Your psyche is attached to your empathy, but it's also attached to other things, like a specific skill called Inland Empire, which has to do with your gut feelings about things, right? It's where this world got its start, after all. I mean, like, it's pretty much all, like, the different abilities that you have stem from Dungeons & Dragons, which we'll also get to when we talk about the background of this game. The way that this fantasy world differs, however, is the idea of the era that it takes place in. We're not in some medieval world of magic, even post-modern sort of thing. Not post-medieval, I mean. Apologies. We're not in some post-medieval world where, like, magic kind of operates like technology in the real world. We're not even in technically Victorian steampunk. I wouldn't necessarily describe it as steampunk. Steampunk is more gears and bits and bobs and, like, if the Zeppelin didn't crash and we started making more Zeppelins and stuff like that, you know? This is a postmodern world. Some of the technology is advanced farther than others, and some of the technology stayed the same. It creates this kind of beautifully grungy and noir palette. There's still technologies left over from the 1950s, which gives it that sort of feeling. There's still motor carriages, for example. Those weird, bulky buggies that have, like, those front engines that aren't covered, and they still have, like, you know, that kind of weird, noir 1950s aesthetic about them, but they still have the modernity of all of the different cultural aspects that kind of culminated within this world. You still have revolutions that occurred. You still have, you know, actual political factions and stuff like that. Things that, you know, obviously existed back in the day, but still had a sort of, I guess simplicity is a bad word for it. What am I trying to say here? Specifically regarding the aspects of 1950s culture versus, say, 2000s culture, for example, right? There was a lot more wars happening nowadays with the technology that was developed. There's a lot more things that are, I guess a lot more things to be angry about in a very, very Nietzschean way to describe that. A lot more ways you can suffer in this world, right? And that's kind of like the culminating factor of how this world got created. This world, as you may guess, it originally based in tabletop role-playing games, pen and paper role-playing games, specifically regarding the choices you make rather than any sort of combat system or other mechanic that is central to the overall world. The whole mechanic of the game is interacting with the world that the Dungeon Master creates. In this case, that Dungeon Master was Robert Kurwitz. Made the game in the 2000s after dropping out of his school in Estonia. And you all know specifically about the politics in Estonia, right? I stare at you intently. I don't know them either, to be fair. But I do know that it used to be a part of the Soviet Union. After the Soviet Union got utterly shattered and destroyed into a million pieces, a lot of these countries had to pick up the scraps, unfortunately. This world is based solely in revolution, right? This world specifically regarding the city of Revachol and all those other civilians who live in it are living in the aftermath of all this war and devastation that occurred to them. But this world that he created, Kurwitz created, was new and fresh to his friends who were more in tune with the classical elves and dwarves that existed in D&D. I try to do this a lot with my world specifically. It gives it a whole new different spark. I still have, for my world specifically, and in this specific instance, I'm going to divulge myself a little bit. So be patient, please. I have a lot to talk about because I've been developing it a lot. I love D&D, dude. I love the game. But in this world, I created the Spiral. It obviously has that blend of fantasy elements. But regarding the actual technology that gets developed, that's out of tune of magic, that's out of tune of all this kind of stuff, they actually have to develop science around it, right? They have to acclimate to this whole different world. And that's kind of what you're doing with the world of Elysium that Kurvitz has created for you, right? In this game specifically. You're not... Everything is familiar, don't get me wrong. There's the same kind of similarity to medieval era as D&D is, right? You have swords, you have factions, you have tangential elements that make medieval what it is, but it's the added element of magic that makes it so much more interesting, right? It's that same concept, but instead of using magic to describe that world, it's using politics. It's using elements of the actual real world to be repurposed into this own world. It's mind-boggling how much development went into this world. And it's depressing to see how a decade later he wanted to adapt this world into a novel. That's not the sad part. What was the sad part is when him and his friends try to publish this book, it was a failure in sales. A lot of people, the few people who picked it up, it really enjoyed the world, but it didn't have any of the marketing. It didn't have any of the actual... it didn't have anything to really make it stand out. Especially in Estonia, it was a very, very hard time to try to publish stuff, especially when America is just a powerhouse. Unfortunately, it's like the Americanization reaches so far and wide that it's almost impossible to really see outside of it, right? Maybe that wasn't the exact case in here, but in 2013, it kind of fell off, and he didn't really see the point of continuing. So Kurvitz continued alcoholism and was at a loss to go where next. One of his friends then brought up the idea of making his world into a game instead. They didn't know what the hell they were doing, especially in making an RPG like this. They were like, this is completely out of our depth. Not only were we trying to make a system that is able to facilitate this world that he's created, but also he's trying to create an actual game, right? It requires art, it requires music, it requires more writers, it requires a lot more things. It's more flexible. It isn't just a story. You're not just watching people on a track make decisions for you. You are making those decisions, right? It's such an interesting thing. And when they actually did it, it sounded like they didn't really feel like they did it, you know? They still felt like they were like pulling teeth while they were going through that process. But the whole point of making stuff is that you're supposed to go through that process and just live through it. Figure out what you enjoy about that process and what makes you want to continue doing it, right? Unfortunately, this doesn't have a happy ending either. We'll discuss the actual fallout between the company, Zaum, the company that they developed, Kurvitz, and I believe, Tunin? I forget his specific name, but those people created that company. That company then fired them and some of the other lead developers for some internal issues caused by them, allegedly, and also from alleged financial fraud that the company itself caused, or the parent company caused, I believe. A few company employees said that it was a pretty gray issue, and no one was necessarily in the right. There was some talk about Zaum making their own game, a watered-down Disco Elysium mobile port, and maybe, I think, another one. I think it's called X17 or something like that. But the fans are not impressed by it. I went to the forums. No one is talking about these games. I feel like they kind of burned most of the bridges they had with the fan base. And they focus mainly on what makes the game fun. So enjoy what the game is. This is a great time to separate the art from the artist. You know the rest. But what the hell is this game anyway? Right? A little background from this. I specifically had a hard time playing this game, or at least trying to talk about it. Especially because I kept running around out of steam during day two from experience what I call apathy. It's a pretty ingenious concept. You know, you just sit around and you do nothing. It's a pretty ingenious concept. And, you know, you could also add the extra twinge of depression in there as well. That always helps. That always goes well, as I used to say. But to put it another way, in the words of the creator himself, the main character is an overbloated avatar of what's gone wrong for a long time. And who's gone wrong for a long time. That part I added. The first part I added. Apologies. I'm losing my mind in here. I'm already drenched in sweat right now. This is funny. He didn't say that either, by the way. Everything that I'm saying right now was not a part of the quote. So let's try it again. The main character is an overbloated avatar who's gone wrong for a long time. But he's in pain because he's still resisting. Every day, I make sure I'm putting every piece of anger and pain into Disco Elysium. What a pessimistic quote right there. But I couldn't say it's not wrong. This game is very depressing. This game takes a lot out of you, but the whole point is to continue striving through that, finding what you enjoy about it, and trying to make decisions in a game, in a world that doesn't really care. Or even worse, makes fun of you no matter what you're doing. This game is a sort of Rorschach test for the player themselves. Returning to the skills that illuminate the game, they aren't just static concepts. They communicate with you. They try to give you advice. They bicker. They counsel you through your game. And most importantly, the better you are at a skill, the more you hear the skill talk to you. Let me explain real quick. The game obviously includes dialogue. And when you're doing specific checks in this game, right? Such as a perception check. It allows you to see, right? It allows you to increase your vision. It allows you to understand what you're interpreting the world as, right? And that has to stem from Motorix. But the concept of perception talks to you. And it's a very soothing British voice, too. Whoever does the voiceover for this game is a phenomenal, phenomenal narrator. Slow at times, but I think it allows the world to have more of an impact. It doesn't rush through things. It allows you to take it in. Really drink in what they're saying. Like I'm trying to do right now. So to give you advice, perception might say like, the warm emerald sea matches the reflection of this person's eyes, right? A kind of a poetic saying phrase. And in conceptualization, the more artistic side, which stems from intellect, then has to reply and said, like, you should write a song about this or some boring crap like that, you know? It's a fun little thing. I obviously pay it a little bit less justice, but, like, they bicker, right? They go back and forth between each other, especially when you have multiple skills that you're in tune with, right? They counsel you through your game. And most importantly, the better you are at a skill, the more they hear you. That's what I meant when I said that. But more, even more so, when they become, quote-unquote, better at a skill, they also can make your character more eccentric when it comes to the investigation. Drama, for example, is something that my character constantly succeeds in. My current save file has a lot of skills points in intellect, which makes a lot of those blue skills like conceptualization, logic, rhetoric, and drama very high. But in D&D, this is a basic insight skill. It allows you to see lies, right? It allows you to interpret people and whether they're actually telling the truth or not or trying to hide anything. But in this game, if you increase your drama skill, you become more paranoid. You are unsure, your character's unsure that victims are giving a faulty testimony or not. Everything could be a damn lie. This whole kit and caboodle, this whole universe could be a lie. And you're just being a little puppet inside of it. And drama is trying to get you out of that. Sire, they're trying to lie to you. They're not telling you the truth, sire. Sire, are you trying to play in their hands? They're obviously lying to you. Another example of this, of course I haven't done a strength build run yet, but Half-Light, the intimidation stat that's based in physique, can make you more bigoted, which is also insane to me. The more you increase your intimidation stat, the more you feel like you are on top of the world. You are on the king's side. You are the king of this world, and you deserve everything. And everyone else is below you, right? It completely contrasts what you think these skills would do for you. Because this man is broken. This man you pilot, this man you control, himself, he is broken. And the art also reflects this, and the game also. Everything about this game kind of sort of reflects this broken state of the world. But in general, skills are not always good. Or at least, they're not... they're not the end-all, be-all, as it's meant to be. The ideas that you have also are another implementation of this kind of sort of mechanic, right? Whenever you're talking to people, there's a chance that you come across dialogue that allows you to unlock an idea, a thought. And these thoughts are stored in your what is called your thought cabinet, right? Different ideas, like the first idea you have, the first thought that is given to you when Kim Kitsuragi, the lieutenant that's partnered with you, is trying to solve the case, and you left that body decomposing for a long time. It's been at least a couple of quite a while. It's been at least 3 days, and you have not done anything about it. It is rotting back there, and it smells terrible. So you try to multiple different solutions to it. You try to just suck it up. You immediately vomit. You try to get smelling salts. That also doesn't work. Not smelling salts. That's what? No, what? Magnesium. Yeah. You try to get some magnesium in you, but that also doesn't work. Then eventually break down. This is like the kind of breaking point of yourself, right? And then Kim is like, brother, you need to get your together. And you're like, oh. And then the volumetric compressor thought gets instilled inside of you. This thought then allows you to be able to do the check again, and it gives you a bonus on specific ideas, right? Jamais vu is another one, which allows you to associate better with reality. These ones don't actually just unlock specific dialogue options. They also increase your stats and also decrease your stats. Like, I think one specific one is the art cop, an actual art degree thought, which increases your conceptualization. It gives you extra, it heals you in your morale, which is one of the statistics, one of the possible ways you could lose it, as it were, which I've done a lot in this game. But it also gives you extra experience points whenever you do a conceptualization thought, whenever your one of your passive thoughts triggers and it's conceptualization. One of the dialogue options is conceptualization. It's quite an interesting idea. And obviously you have to use more skill points. The more you level up, the more skill points you get. You can file in more slots, internalize them, and make them more, I guess, customize your character a little bit more. That's kind of the idea, right? You internalize thoughts specifically. There's more problematic ones, don't get me wrong. Like, the whole idea around this game is that you're trying to solve this murder, right? This lynching that took place behind the Whirling and Rags, which is the bar that you woke up in, right? And the whole concept is you trying to stumble through the world, trying to make your whole matter about things, and trying to understand where you fit in all of it, right? That's the whole idea, right? And there's obviously different factions that could sway you, right? And every decision you make, no matter whether you think it's good or not, the game will make fun of you. Don't get me wrong. That's probably one of the main reasons why I haven't beaten this game yet. Because I haven't developed the sort of skin that you need in order to really tackle this game head on. This game will make fun of you at every corner, every step of the way. Whenever you make a failure, it's almost funny in a sense. It's trying to make fun of you. And it goes into a more comedic route in some cases. But in a lot of cases, you realize that it's like, no matter what you do in this game, it's just a Rorschach test. That's it. That's all it is. And maybe that's fine. Maybe you enjoy that. In some other cases, you want to try to make your mark in the world, right? In some cases, you might want to just sit back and watch the case unfold on its own, right? Keep in mind as well, the creator, what's his name again? Robert Kurvitz. He is a communist. Don't get me wrong. He does. He admits this. This is not like a specifically hindsight, like, this is not, like, a high thought here. He specifically says he has, like, a bust of a very influential Marxist on his desk, right? Whether that's a joke or not is besides the point. He obviously has an opinion about this. But there were so many writers who worked on this game to keep it this sort of idea balanced. He wanted to make sure that this game kind of attributed to everybody who played this game, right? All the characters have this sort of fleshing out that always kept me equally engaged and pissed, especially when it comes to Everard, or as I like to call him, Ev Fart. Anyway. I wrote this down like 5 minutes ago, and I was like, yes, this is perfect. Everard, and more like Ev Fart. Get him! But no, yeah, he's, Everard is an interesting character, because he's one of the first, like, big figures you meet when you're trying to figure out this murder case. And it kind of comes as a shock that, no kidding, yeah, it was a bunch of the dock workers who worked for the union, which he is the leader of. He is the de facto leader of the union in Revachol. And as you might figure, it is a little bit corrupt. It wants to get a little bit more influence, a little bit more power. But as he says, it might be for the people or it might not be. That's for you to decide. That's for you to figure out. That's for you to find out. That's for your character to find out, right? So in all of this, culminatively, this game isn't fun in the iconic sense of a video game being fun. You're not going to have fun, really, trying to figure out, like, constantly being belittled for trying to make the world right in your own way, right? This game isn't, you're supposed to take the piss out of it. Obviously, also, it's fun to see how this world is so intricate. There's so many different facets to this world that are unique specifically to Elysium. Like the Coalition, the Union, Wild Pines, all these different factions come together and just kind of make the world full of gray and murky mahogany beige color. It gives that sort of murky scent that also it makes it full of intrigue. It's like rolling around in the mud and finding some gold in there, you know? And I also love how the characters are three-dimensional. There's so much character to all of them that kind of makes this world sort of click together in a very fun way, which is probably why I kind of went into the intellect, because I look at this game as a sort of case study into my own world that I create, trying to figure out specifically, okay, the character can interact in a specific way, but in order for me to actually figure out how this world works, and also my shirt is sticking to my actual my skin, that's disgusting. This is terrible. I'm in hell right now. To see how these characters function and operate within a world that's already broken is something that my world also has to figure out, right? So in this sort of sense, intellect allows me to peel back the layers of trying to figure out this world and to put it, try to be as little as pretentious as possible. This game is art. This game is the definition, the sole definition of how video games can be art. This game, like many paintings and music and all that kind of stuff, provides a vessel for someone to place their interpretation into, to place their feelings, to place their understanding of the world into, while also being something completely separate from reality, right? It allows you to explore these ideas without running amok in the actual world with them. Testing them out, seeing what this specific interpretation of the world would do to you if you were in this universe. And I guess my mistake when I was exploring this game before was trying to control a sort of character. I wanted to make a detective that was specifically grounded in these specific concepts. Like, I wanted to make a Columbo for my first save file. And I wanted to actually make a Vimes for myself, like, from the Discworld. I wanted to make a Vimes character, right? Someone who's really upstanding and understands the world very intuitively and has, like, a lot of a very grounded sense of personality, even in the face of absolute chaos. Obviously, I didn't really focus on the specific things that makes Samuel Vimes Samuel Vimes, so that didn't work. So that's what my first save file kind of went out. And I got pretty far with it. I went through the halfway of day two with it. Then I will try to go with the Columbo stat. Like, I'll try to be, like, a really personable guy
Hey, how's it going? I noticed that you're trying to carry that. You want me to carry that for you? Like a nice, personable guy, you know?
But also tries to get, like, use that to try to dig into the world very intuitively. Unfortunately, also, he's very bad with guns. And the thing about this game, too, is that there's obviously a bunch of ways to solve things, but they kind of click together in a way where you eventually get to a roadblock where you have to figure out specifically, okay, this is how this world works. If you're trying to go, like, brute force, like, physical on the world, you're not really going to get that far. You might get a little bit far with breaking down doors, grabbing the person by the shirt, where is he? But, like, you're not... I feel like with the more mindful elements, like intellect and psyche, they allow you to actually interact with the world in a more meaningful way. Of course, I haven't done it. Again, I want to do a physical run where I'm just goofy and I got like a bunch of muscle and I'm just breaking down people and also doors, and I just want to do that. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen anytime soon, but we'll see. Again, I've gotten to day two with this, right? And this is where I'm going to divulge a little bit into spoilers, so if you don't want to listen to those, keep that in mind, right? I think a lot of the game so far is me trying to figure out exactly what I want to do with it, right? There's obviously Kim Kitsuragi, which is your partner in crime, the person who stands up for you, but also the person who gives you a stern order. He's kind of like your dad. He's kind of like your dad, you know? But in the same way, I feel like this game has a very grounded sense when it comes to picking a side. It's a very solemn choice being made when you're just trying to decide what you're going to do in the world. And I realized, I don't want to make a choice. You kidding me? This all this kind of stuff about the world kind of flies over my head in a sense, you know? This world is too much. It's too much and it's too little at the same time, which is why I chose the art cop. What's it called? Capo type. In this game, there's a bunch of different capo types too, which are unlocked by doing specific things with your skills, right? There's a few specific ones. There's the superstar. There's the art cop, like I mentioned. There's the boring cop, the sorry cop. And they're all choices that you make specifically from what your specific leanings are, right? I didn't really want to focus too much on the politics. As jokingly as I wanted to, I wanted to focus more on the world, the actual, like, people themselves rather than the politics, which is a core tenement of the people, of course, but, like, it's not, like, the whole encompassing thing about the world, you know? Like, people can have opinions about things. Like, I can believe a specific thing, but, like, politics isn't your thoughts at the end of the day, right? That's something that a lot of people get mixed up with. So, it's trying to find that fine line between just trying to goof around this world, see what they have to say, and trying to solve the murder versus trying to actually make a statement with it, right? I don't, at least in this save file, I want to just get my toes wet first. I don't really want to make a statement with it yet. So, I'm just playing my own character, whatever, it's doing great. I'm trying to paint a wall. There's these fun little checks as well scattered throughout the game. Obviously, there's, like, other things you can do with trying to solve the murder, but who cares about all that stuff, right? You want to talk about the, because obviously you roll two dice, right? Just a quick explanation on the difficulty of these tasks, right? You roll a dice, you get your check, whatever, right? Those are your actual manual checks, right? So it goes up to 12, but obviously you have modifiers that increase that and could go up to like 18 or whatever, right? That's like somewhere around the impossible legendary difficulty scale. And there's a wall that you come across occasionally when you're just walking around the place, right? There's this random wall that when you hover over it, you can click on it. And it's like, this is a wall. This is a wall. And you're like, okay. And there's a conceptualization option. 18, so you have to roll an 18 or higher on this. And remind you, this is out of 12. So you have to have a bunch of modifiers that allow you to succeed on this check, right? But when you do, You're like, this is the perfectest. This is what I'm talking about specifically with conceptualization as well, right? With drama, there was that specific idea of when you're in, sort of confronting one of the victims who was a part of this quote-unquote lynching. I won't spoil too much, but let's say it was theoretically maybe it wasn't really a lynching, you know? Maybe you just got a little accident happened, you know? And then the union had to cover it up. That's all I'm saying. Gabagool. But specifically with trying to figure out if this person is telling a lie or not, your drama senses just continue to fire off consistently, right? Even if they're not even lying. Same kind of thing goes with conceptualization. You look at a wall and you're like, this is the best piece of work I've ever seen. I gotta make this perfect. So then you have to try to find a paintbrush and you have to try to find a bunch of these people. This game is so dumb, but I love it so much because it at the same time, it makes such a statement, but also is if you wanted to take the piss, you can let it take the piss. It allows you to have this full encompassing idea about it, right? You're a blank slate. You are a vessel. You have no idea about this world. You are a spectator in this world. You just arrived here. You are a newborn in the amount of knowledge you have about this world. But you still have the intricacies of how people operate, and you know how yourself is a failure, and you know how a bunch of these things work. And you can still make your judgment call based on those things, right? As much as that makes sense. Again, this is a completely kind of abstract explanation of this game. If you want an actual taste of it, wait for it to go on sale. Usually it goes on sale for, I'd say, I think I got it for like $25. It was $40. It got reduced to $25. Just get it. Look, you know, obviously, maybe not support your company. But like, this game is solid gold. I hate to say it. This work is great. I hope that the people who worked on this game are going to find something else they can latch onto or hopefully make up for the mistakes that have transpired. But this game, so far, it just makes me wanting. It makes me crave more, even though it's not necessarily fun. This game, it nourishes the soul rather than the funny ape that constantly bangs cymbals in my brain, right? Obviously, I still try to engage with the more fun sides of life. I watch a D&D podcast, but it also makes me enjoy the more intriguing sides of life, the things that I kind of still question about, but I never really get to explore because I haven't really had the stamina for it yet. I feel like this game kind of sort of builds up my stamina back. It allows me to explore these concepts, even if some of them go completely over my head, like the coalition government and all these kind of completely made-up things, but are completely also in reality. It allows me to keep in tune with them a little bit more. Besides the point. Let's talk about the music. And we can go into a quick intermission and we can wrap up and we'll talk about a little bit something else, a little bit out of left field, a little bit abstract as well. The soundtrack, I love. I love the soundtrack. You listened to, on my Instagram story, the Instrument of Surrender, which is one of the most popular tracks. This is the thing that people recognize this game a lot from. And it, by God, I love the minimalist aspect to it. It is so atmospheric. It allows you to really seep into the sort of noir aspect of this game. This band who made it, Sea Power, is a rock band by heart, right? They obviously have very polarizing views and they have a lot of things to say, but this soundtrack itself was kind of sort of out of nowhere. It was kind of out of left field for them. They never made a soundtrack for a video game before, as do most of these people nowadays, because this is kind of becoming the norm. And what happened from this aspect is beautiful to me. I'm going to play another song. I'm going to play another track. Here's my favorite and my most hated scene in this entire game, right? So Everard hires this guy, this bodyguard, to make sure that none of the people enter in. The problem is that this guy is an extreme racist. This man is so racist that he's made an entire code about it, right? He calls, like, alcohol Muldool, and he calls about the brain disease, the Pyron disease that's eating inside of your brain. But he says it with such a stone-faced sincerity that you're dumb for not thinking about it before? That you have to internalize his thought of racism in order to bypass or try to knock him out, right? It's such a... I wouldn't necessarily call it clever, but this is like the core testament, I mean testament to what this game sort of entails. It makes you really try to get out of your own thinking. It makes fun of you for trying to beat him up, but also tries to make fun of you trying to, I guess, not necessarily consolidate, because you can still disagree with him. But the whole idea is that Everard's trying to make you look terrible while doing it. That you're trying to confide in this racist and trying to get the leg underneath you, right? Kind of get the upper hand. That's what I'm trying to make. The leg underneath you? Is that like a... I guess like the clothesline, the leg sweep. You know what I'm saying. Anyway, I believe... And it's not your body that betrays your degeneracy. I believe it's the Insoldian miracle. I'm pretty sure. All these songs are great, by the way. It's so atmospheric. It's perfect for studying. But this one specifically, I believe, is the kind of more... Like it's a more drony. It's more, like, intense. Like, this is like, what am I going to do about this guy? Like, I don't know what the hell he's saying. This is, like, the first moment where you realize, like, this is completely out of my depth. Like, some things I could have realized about this world, but this man is talking nonsense. Let's listen. So that's the general consensus. It was actually your body betrays your degeneracy. My apologies. It's a more ambient track, but I think it also really represents that scene so well, and it makes it stick out like a sore thumb. It's terrible, but it's great at the same time. All right, so that's pretty much it. I think what I want to end it on right now is specifically the art, because I was looking up a specific... I was really intrigued by the art style specifically, because all of the different characters and skills have their own portrait, right? But these art caricatures kind of are really, really detailed, and I have a lot of character to them. I didn't really understand it until I watched a Dr. K Let's Play. Dr. K is like a gay... I think he's like a... I'm pretty sure he's a therapist. No, he's not a therapist. A psychologist who is on Twitch, who streams on Twitch, and also has like a bunch... He has a quite a decent following. He does a lot of, like, analytic stuff and talks to different streamers about mental health and stuff like that. And he played this game. And he was really interested by the art as well. And I was like, oh, that's cool. But then he brought up specifically what it was kind of sort of inspired by. Maybe not specifically inspired by, but there was a schizophrenic painter named Brian Charnley. He, I believe, suffered from a couple of years from this schizophrenia from 1971 to 1977, which then he eventually recovered from, but then eventually brought himself back down again. And throughout this entire process, they constantly asked him to paint a self-portrait of himself, right? Paint a self-portrait of yourself. That it was it's very interesting to see the semblance of himself before the schizophrenia. Very normal, very, very realistic paintings of himself. But then eventually they become more... Here we go, self-portraits. Like 1991, it looks pretty normal, right? If you go to the website, I think BrianCharnley.info, you can check out all of these paintings there. The first one's pretty normal. He's just a guy, right? He's just a guy, normal guy. Then you go to, like, another one of these paintings, you're like, oh, God, where's your mouth, man? Why is there a nail inside of a target inside of your mouth? It's bleeding out. Obviously, these could represent, like... Like, the boundaries are obviously not as defined as you would normally say in any other specific painting, right? And, like, different objects and, like, your different parts of your body are realigned and stuff. You can see that his, the top half of his head, his forehead, is completely encompassed by another mouth that's protruding out different lines, and it also has, like, a tongue sticking out. could possibly mean that he's being silenced. There are different ways. Like, a lot of the like, from what I've seen and what I've researched, there's a lot of schizophrenia patients who report being sort of, like, silenced by whatever they think is sort of isolating them, or what they believe is what's they're imagining, right? Either that be the government or, like, just, like, the world at large, the reality that they live in, you know? Scary stuff, but very intriguing as well. Like the more you look at these as well, the more you can see the semblance with him and the art form of Disco Elysium, right? It's all about trying to make sense of a world that never was meant to make sense to you. Like, this world is rigid and confined to a lot of these people. A lot of these people just grew up in it. But you don't have any memory of it. You don't know what this world is supposed to be. You don't know what this is supposed to be for you, specifically. And those specific skills I was talking about represent that. And one of them, specifically, for logic, it represents, like, a person's brain, and half of it is completely normal. A face is half normal. The other half is completely, like, little bits and pieces, like, of it, almost like a jigsaw puzzle, being trying to reconstruct itself, right? Trying to represent of making sense of the world, right? It's the most, like, probably the most grounded skill you have. And everything else is kind of completely outside of it. Conceptualization is you holding a cube, or, like, a picture of someone holding a cube, and it's emitting these things that are completely dismorphing half of the face as well. Empathy is a more relaxed face, but it's completely being melted off, and it's, like, being held by this sort of orb. Rhetoric is interesting, too, because I think it looks kind of like a person eating someone's head. It's almost like a weird... What is that one? Saturn eating his own son, right? That one. Which was also created by someone who was developing some sort of mental illness. It's very weird. It's almost getting in touch with this kind of sort of abstract concept of what makes identity real, what makes us real, you know? That's the sort of thing that this game gets across, I feel like, in a lot of senses. Like, who are you? That is the main thing it's asking, right? Just looking at these things, too, like, eventually, they don't even look like... They don't even look like self-portraits anymore. Like, this one's just a map. Or it could be, like, a different... Could be different things of, like, you know, pathways, maybe. Different streets, different... Maybe neurons, veins, arteries, who knows. That looks like a sword. Like, that's crazy to me. That's crazy to me. The central text reads, "The cards are not... no good that I'm holding unless they are from another world." I'd you know, there's not a lot of games that can make me speechless like this. Like, a lot of time I have a way to, like, bounce back from it, but it just kind of bums me out. I don't know. It's interesting. Anyway, just something to think about when you eventually get this game, because this game should be mandatory for everyone to play. I'm just kidding. No, this game is fantastic. Obviously, there's some things that I critique about it. There's some things that I think are a bit slow. There's some things that I think could be done better. But I think overall, this game is just something that you have to experience in order to fully understand, right? It's just the power of this kind of game. I don't know what to tell you. Just try it out yourself. I'm cooking in here. I think we gotta end it. I hope you all enjoyed. I'm debating whether to make a part two when I finish the game, but I think I'll probably just stick to maybe filing that into, like, another missing miscellaneous episode. We'll see. It's been a while since I did one of those. I hope I don't have to rely too heavily on those, but I think I'm starting to get my stride again. I think it's starting to come back to me. This is all coming back to me. And I hope you stick around, ladies and germs. And I hope you have a fantastic summer. The summer has just started. June has ended. We're getting into the main fray. It's going to turn into hell soon, so be ready for it. And I hope you have a fantastic 2 weeks. Bye-bye.